listening to the Defenestrate Media Network.
It's Roast with J.M. Bell and Tom. Here are your Roastmasters.
All right, that's a little bit of an edit from a band called Tycho out of Seattle.
So yeah? What?
Shit.
You playing that because you saw another rainbow?
Double rainbow!
I was telling that story the other day about how I've got a buddy who lives in Oregon, you, by the way, and how we were supposed to record one day, and you put me on pause for an hour because there was a double rainbow, to which I said it was the most Oregon thing he has ever said to me.
Here's another Oregon thing. I got free tickets to go to the Timbers. So I'm going to do that tonight. All right. A million people are coming into the fucking state because of the eclipse.
Right.
And because of it, everything is bollocksed. All the fucking traffic in all directions is all bad. There's an EDM festival going on. Wow, I can hear myself. There's an EDM festival going on in Central Oregon, and there are gas shortages. So if you cut across from the northwest to the southeast of the state, and sad face because Utah doesn't get it, but parts of Idaho and then Wyoming do.
We get at 80% occlusion or whatever it's called. And I was thinking about running up to Idaho, but the parts of Idaho that get 100% are some of the worst parts of Idaho. So, well, it is Idaho, but
it is Idaho.
I don't want to go to Rexburg. In fact, I don't even know if I'm allowed in Rexburg anymore. There was sort of a.
What did you do in Rexburg?
Well,
Jeff, what did you do?
I'll give you the base story, and then you can build on that in your imagination, which has got to be more fun. But we went on a debate tournament in college in 91. And I have never seen more. The two things I remember from this particular outing were the first, it was pitch black outside. And there was a fluorescent, a very white fluorescent single bulb in the parking lot of the motel we were in. And when someone who had gone to try and find food at 9 o'clock at night when the whole goddamn town was closed, opened the door, I saw the blackness of the sky. And then immediately it was like being in the middle of a cloud in the middle of the day. Because all of the smoke escaped the room and was lit by that fluorescent to the point that it appeared as though an alien spaceship were dropping my buddy off. And then the other thing we found out the next morning, there was six of us in this one room with two twin beds, but we found out that girls not only fart, they poop. And it was like, you knew it.
Well, they sleep.
You knew it because everybody poops. I've read the book. But to be in a room that small, that crowded, and that wood paneled, while this particular young lady basically did what guys in movies do, like Dumb and Dumber, that next morning.
Oh my god, we were shocked.
And it was just like so goddamn dumb and juvenile, and yet at the same time it was just like brah brah brah. And we're like, oh, I didn't know girls made those noises, and she's all, fuck off all of ya. But we didn't do anything other than really ignore the no smoking designation of pretty much every square inch of that goddamn town. We made an awful lot of noise. The cops visited three times just to tell us to shut the fuck up.
Wow.
We were rowdy. We were drinking.
Oh my God.
Not a lot of debauchery, nothing bad, but the cops were finally like, you know, damn it, just hope you city boys quit coming to our damn town. I don't ever want to see you again.
Down there, Utah.
And it's like, wait, we weren't doing anything illegal. Okay, me drinking was illegal, but I looked over 21, even though I was 17. Nobody checked my ID, thank God. So, and there was, nah, I won't cover that. And there was a bit of statutory, but I would have been the victim. So, well, like I said, nobody knew how young I was. Not a lot of kids in Utah, especially out of the Alpine School District, go to college at 16. So, and I was 6'4". You know, I had the broad shoulders and the long hair. Everybody just assumed I was in my 20s. I was not. Nope.
This is what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, since this is a show that sometimes airs grievances, I just wanted to say that originally one of the things that started my coffee cast was I was able to sign up for a thing called Audible. And Audible has this thing where if people click and go to their audible.com thing through a URL, you actually get, you know, a little bit of a payback, you know, for that. I never did. And now for a long, long time, I always had it at the top of the show. And then one day I got this email saying, upon review of the current guidelines, the content of your show does not fit the criteria outlined for the program.
What?
It's like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? Okay, so I could go down about all the things that it does do. I mean, there are at least 3 episodes available for listening. Time lapse between episodes should be no longer than a month. Podcast should be available on iTunes or YouTube. I don't go on YouTube anyway. If on iTunes, podcast should average customer rating of 4+ stars. Well, it certainly does, especially if you go to, I don't know whether or not it's on iTunes or whether or not it's on Stitcher. I get some very nice reviews. Anyway. Here's the one thing it said. Sites and podcasts may not be of political nature, politically or promote sexually explicit material, violence, discrimination, illegal activities, or any violation of intellectual property rights. Well, I could tell you out of that, but we definitely talk about things of a political nature. So I let this thing drop, and it bugged me. It ate at me, and I wrote them back, and I resubmitted everything, and I just said, hey, it's a great show. And they write back and they say, once again, upon review of the current guidelines, the content of your show does not fit the criteria outlined for the program. And once again, it was like the very same thing. It was like, so I wrote back, I go, after reviewing the guidelines, can you inform me on what show content does not fit Audible's criteria? The iTunes listing features 2 5-star reviews. I would like to know the specifics. And they write back and they go, hi, Tom. Thanks for being in touch. I ask you to refer to the 9th bullet point in the guidelines. Okay.
No so, Toms allowed.
Here we go. 9th. Site and podcast may not be of political nature.
What?
Promote sexually explicit material, violence, discrimination, illegal activities, or violation of intellectual property rights. So then I write back and I finally go, you know, although the Audible approval guidelines are still vague on what specific criteria applies to the CoffeeCast. Allow me to inform you that the CoffeeCast afflicts the comfortable and comforts the afflicted. The exposure in the show exposes discrimination, acts of violence, and reveals illegal activities. I can definitely say that. We defend and champion equality and human rights. Sexuality may be discussed. We do not promote sexually explicit material on the show. Sometimes. We, however, use swear words. Sometimes all the swears and identify it as so. The political nature of the show addresses the extraordinary times we live in. We expose bigotry, hatred, and discrimination. We work for a just and fair world for all. It's a show worthy of your sponsorship. I left it at that, and I haven't heard back from them. So it's like, fuck you guys.
You know, and this is the Audible where you do their readout.
Uh-huh.
Fucking Left Show was on Audible for 3 years until I got sick of reading the goddamn script.
And nothing was happening. There was no money coming from them.
No, not a pip. And I had people telling me that they signed up for Audible through that. Through our link, and Audible kept saying that no one had. Yeah, no, Audible was rough, man. Getting everything signed up and putting it all together, and then whoever the helper was awesome, even though no help happened.
What a surprise. So there you have it. And that was just my little thing. So it's been a fuck of a week. I just thought I would get that out of the way because I like, if anything, to expose some of the things that go on behind the scenes, because that's what really makes things interesting.
Yeah.
Nothing around here has really been too terribly interesting. We painted the studio. We painted the office.
Looks great,
and then,
by the way.
I bought a bunch of really cheap RLX, and I put it in here inside the closet. I'm in the closet right now.
I know.
So
you are.
I don't know if the audio is any better or not. Hopefully, it'll get better. We'll find out. Anyway, fuck of a week. There were the white supremacist marchings last Friday, Saturday, and then killings, murders. Heather Heyer.
What was the one just now? Just Finland? Was that Finland?
Yeah, there was Finland and
who
Barcelona.
Who the fuck kills anybody in Finland?
I don't know. But there is a nice Monty Python Finland song. Land Where I Want to Be.
I do love
your
that song.
So lovely.
It was one of my kids had so asked about Finland one day. Finland, 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 the place that I want to be.
And where I want to be, your forest so lovely, your treetops so tall. And here is a tragedy where somebody was, knifed and, I'm just like, God, how can I joke about that? I can't. But it's been a fuck of a week. And then apparently a house dropped on Steve Bannon. So there you have it.
Which is fine. I mean, it's like, to be honest, my being startled about it was more that it, one, happened at all, but also that it took so long. It's split because here's the thing. Just to get some Trump out of the way. Listening to Trump over the last 3-4 days since Charlottesville.
And more unhinged.
That's the thing is it's like I've been listening to this guy talk for fucking years, man. Since he first flirted with running for president on the Reform Party ticket was when I first started paying attention to him politically. It's why I think I was one of the few people that took him seriously as a dark horse candidate when nobody else was, when everybody was telling me I was just completely fucking full of shit. But
Well, they should have listened to you.
Nah, fuck them. So, but that didn't sound like him. And it was weird. The cadences were his, but he has.
What part? Recently or just.
The whole thing with Charlottesville and the on many sides and that like pulling out of his ass the alt left shit or what are we being called now? The Antifa. What the fuck is that, Antifa, man?
Wait, is that something like
anti-fascist?
Client Smith Glaxo? Is that some kind of diuretic? What is that?
Yeah. It's dipshit is what it is. What we are is fucking Americans who remember that we fought a goddamn war with the rest of the world to get rid of fascism. We did.
And generations did. And here's the fucking thing about it, Jeff, is that if they want to start perpetuating alt left, first of all, you have to self-identify. The first people to self-identify as alt anything is the right wing, the white supremacists, the Nazis, the Bannons themselves that call themselves alt-right. They identified that because they wanted to sanitize what their name was rather than somebody coming out and saying, well, you're fucking Nazis. Here's the thing. Nobody on the left calls themselves alt-left. Nobody calls them the Antifa. I don't know what the fuck that is. Stop calling it that.
It's dumb. That's what it is.
I'll be anti-Nazi. Yeah, great. Anti-white supremacist. Sure. Fuck those guys. Go ahead.
No, that's how you make more. Don't do that.
What do you mean?
It's fucking makes more.
Anti-Nazi?
Yeah, don't fucking Nazi. That makes more Nazis. Do I need to explain to you how the human reproductive system works? See, what happens is...
I said the words I said anti-Nazi. I said punch a Nazi. I said,
yeah, punch a Nazi.
Against Nazis. And then, against,
he, said, and then he said, fuck those guys. To which I said, don't fuck those guys. That's how you make more. Punch him. Absolutely.
Oh, fuck.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It was
okay,
sneaky.
I get it now.
So, okay, let me throw this out then, as long as we're talking about these fucking idiots. My favorite, goddamn, excuse me, story quote. I'm going to tell you in a minute why it's a goddamn half a miracle I'm here today. I love this. I love this. This headline I'm about to read you. And below that, the pull quote from it is just giving me the rueful giggles. And this is off of the Broadly section of Vice.com. And the headline is, doxing white supremacists is making them terrified. Now, oh, no, don't laugh yet. You're going to want to save it for this next bit. The pull quote that they have yanked for this is, and it's a quote, "It's hard to get a job. Hard to make a living, hard to have a social life when all your friends and family know you believe in ethnic cleansing."
Too bad.
It's like, are you shitting me? Like, I give a fuck about this?
The crying Nazis?
You believe in ethnic cleansing. You don't deserve a social life.
You don't deserve a life. You deserve to be chased. You deserve to run. You deserve to be chased. You deserve to be brought out into the light from the shadows, the rocks by which you live under.
Yeah. It's what was I think my favorite dumbass thing I said over the weekend, last weekend, was that I didn't spend the 80s and 90s driving around town beating up skinheads for this to just fucking pop up again. It's like all of my hard work. The reason that my knuckles have arthritis, the reason that my wrists sprain, you know, are because me and my buddies from the dojo used to drive around finding, for some reason, California had this weird habit of dumping their fucking skinheads in Utah for a while. And friends of ours were being harassed and abused to a point. And so me and, you know, a few of the guys out of my dojo used to spend time driving around. That carried with me over to Denver, where I would find excuses. I think we know by now that before I had kids and got fat, I had a bit of an anger management problem. And the way that I managed that was by beating up skinheads. And then that kept me calm for the people in my life that I cared about. And I found that a really good therapeutic tool. And then they just kind of disappeared in the early 90s. And I guess they all moved to northern Idaho up to Coeur d'Alene and started all these goofy fucking militias. And now, thanks to Trump, and I don't care if he did it on purpose or if he is just the inspiration for white hate, but these fuckers, it's hard to have a social life when your friends and family know you're into ethnic cleansing. Fuck you, you dumbass. What a dumbass. I'm trying not to be Australian because there's a particular C word.
Oops.
Well, look, here's the thing. As I've said on some of the other shows, I have always thought Jim Jeffries was funny as hell. But now that he's doing politics and I figured out that he's clear out here on the fringe left with me, I fucking love the guy. And the fact that he is trying to demystify the C word, I like it. Take the power out of it. You know, turn it into what it is. And that's just something Australians call each other for fun. So, you know, look, there are a few words and phrases that I don't even utter in the privacy of my own head. And one of those has to do with the N word, which we've got to find a new euphemism for, because saying the N word makes me feel like I'm trying not to say cookie in front of a toddler. And which, by the way, when you spell it out, it's a really quick way for your kids to learn how to spell certain words. Cookie being one of those. The other one is a couple of different derogatory phrases for the first peoples, the Native Americans here. I've spent enough time with them to know that what we did to them is a crime of such magnitude that, I mean, we slavery was awful. It was horrible. You know, it was abominable. And it pops up and we talk about it. And even if it's in a derogatory sense, people admit that it happened. But we committed a mass fucking genocide, at least double the size of what Hitler did to the natives on this land.
Yes, we did.
And we don't say horseshit about it ever. It is the worst kept secret of the American history. And so I get it. I get it that there are white people that feel threatened because they are no longer allowed to hate at will. And because my hate is mostly directed toward white people, I don't share that sentiment with them. I am what I am, and I am a person who does not like other persons. I like specific persons, but for the most part, as groups, I find most people that have flown out of the majority of the European countries and come here to be reprehensible, awful. And if there's anything in the world worse than a wasp to me, you know, outside of you know, pederastic child molesters, I don't know what it is. But, you know, there's fucking Nazis marching in America. And we have not had that since the 40s. At the very least, they fucking hid. And then they popped up as the skinheads, which were, looking back, sort of laughable. They were just like the dumbest street gang of all time. And then they disappeared again after the whole Martin Luther King Day kerfuffles that happened all over the country there in the early 90s, of which I was delighted to have taken part in a couple, usually as a violent agitator on the anti-Nazi side. But, you know, we got a lot to answer for.
Didn't know about you. This is as being a victim of bullies and stuff like that, as much as Nazis and racists and that horrible, horrible contingent are, my mockery and my ridicule of them and everything I can like try, you know, associate with them. I haven't been in a place where I actually have to use my fists.
Well,
I mean, what shook me about the Max train assault,
yeah,
where the two guys were murdered, was that I was on a different train that day. And what shook me was I probably would have been involved in that. And I don't know. If I see somebody who's going after somebody else, I am going to jump in and I am going to do something. I'm not just going to stand there and say something.
Yeah.
I am going to act. And
can I give you a little bit of advice? If ever you're in close quarters with somebody with a knife, kick a lot. They might get your leg, but chances are all they're going to do is stab your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go in there with the top body, you got an awful lot of open space and light material in front.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I've actually done some thinking about what exactly, how you would approach somebody with a knife like that. And I'm just thinking, like, why am I even going here?
I mean, it's
how often is this going to happen?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I don't promote violence as a solution. I really, but every once in a while, and this has just been a lifelong philosophy that I've had. And every once in a while, conversation is done. There is nothing more to say to a person. And you can walk away, which is the nobler thing to do. It always will be. And my problem is that my upbringing, I had a very calm, thoughtful parent. And I had a very quick to anger, violent parent. My mother. See, flipped roles there. I think it's one of the reasons.
Interesting, because it was the opposite on my end.
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons I'm a Democrat. I can look at roles differently, but
that's a whole other story.
My dad, I mean, no, mom would get pissed and start swinging. And from what my grandparents told me, what's that?
Really?
Oh, it's always my mom. Always my mom. And from what my grandparents told me is that she had a lifelong distrust and disdain of redheaded children. She didn't like redheads. She doesn't like redheads. She doesn't like beards. I have
Jesus
both
fucking
now.
Christ.
You know what? People are nuts. What are you going to do? And we get along fine now. But So I would see how effective her particular brand of child rearing was. And then my father would lecture, and he lectured like a master, like a don. And I always appreciated that. But it was my dad who grew up in, you know, rural Utah, broke horses most of his life, did a couple stints in the army, you know, went to college, ran his own business. My dad was a genuine badass and a tough guy. I mean, he's 83 now, so I could probably take him, but probably. I mean, he just had open heart surgery and was giggling the whole way through, so maybe he's still a badass. But his
that's badass. That's
his badass. Line for me was he's like, you know, don't agitate. Don't look for a fight ever.
No.
But never throw the first punch. Always throw the second and always throw the last. And that may be a little bit aggressive language for the way we raise kids now, but that's how I talk to my kids now. And I didn't at first. But we're moving into a world where, and maybe, look, people are blaming the internet. I don't give a shit. I think we've always been fucking awful people. There's a meme floating around, one of my favorite ones that's, it's like people are blaming violence these days on video games, but not, you know,
back it used before, to be television shows.
Well, no, back before that, it's like when we had no TV or internet, we were burning people at the stake. So maybe human beings have been pieces of shit forever. So, you know, so I spent a lot of my teens, just kind of looking for an excuse to make somebody swing and following my father's advice until I started running into, you know, white supremacists, at which point I didn't care anymore who threw the first punch as long as I was throwing the last. And that worked for me really well until I was about 24 and started a fight with a couple of skinheads, and there were three more I didn't see. And we all got to go to the hospital together. It was a rousing good time. And at that point, I started rethinking my, I could beat up anybody, no matter how many of them there are, mentality. And started being a little smarter, started working in advocacy instead. You know, and slowly worked my way. And the last time I hit somebody was about 6 months before I got married. So almost 16 years ago. And it was a guy in a Lexus who backed into my truck. I was parked. And he flew out and just started screaming at me about my old piece of shit truck and his fancy new car. And I just sat there and let him scream. And finally I said, could you shut the fuck up? You just ran into me. And he's like, it shouldn't matter. You have a piece of shit truck and this and that and the other. And he got in my face and he started poking me. So I slapped him. I just slapped him right in the mouth. Pow.
Wow.
And he stopped, and then he started to cry. And I'm like, so I'm going to call the cops now, and we can talk about what just happened. But you touched me, so I touched you again. And if you want to tell the cops that I slapped you, you're more than welcome. So they got there. He didn't mention it. Insurance, yada, yada. And then I found out I was having a kid, and I stopped. The desire's still there, you know. Yeah. I still get in arguments with people, and I'm just like, you know, I can tell that no matter how much fact and logic I'm throwing at you, you're just going to let it bounce off your meaty fucking forehead, you monobrowed dipshit, you know? And then maybe if I smack you in just the right place, a couple of points will get through. And I know that that's not how life works, but God damn it. And no offense to my pacifist friends, because most of them are. Boy, it feels good. It just feels fucking awesome sometimes to just smack a dipshit right upside the head. It just does.
You're listening to two gingers. Mm-hmm. And if there's anybody who understands the other, it's that. I never understood that I was, until I was 9 years old. Being in a neighborhood where I was accepted was fine. The trouble began when we moved. And when we moved, we moved to a place where my dad was going to have a stable employment for the rest of his life. But we were surrounded by white trash and racists. And from the very first day, I stepped foot on my own property, the next door neighbor, the next door neighbor kid, about 4 years younger than I am, immediately starts calling me out that I am some kind of like freak, some kind of, you know, lesser than them. It didn't just spread to that. It spread to the neighborhood. It spread to the bullies. It spread to just getting chased around and the shit getting beat out of me. And here I am, a Catholic boy, where I'm learning to turn the other cheek, as I'm hearing about all the time. And so I developed a pretty incendiary rage that finally I dealt with. I finally was able to accept that I had a tremendous anger. And whenever I saw other people getting bullied, pushed, punched, knocked down, hit with hoses, whatever, just simply because for some particular reason that you just might happen to have a skin color, or you might happen to come from a certain country or something else, I took great exception to that. Now, when it comes to certain things, of course I've been a bully. I haven't been perfect. I've done a lot of learning. But when it comes to things, it has to come to a certain place where it gets physical for me.
You know, it's funny that you mention it. It's the I've done a lot of learning. I have been an intellectual bully pretty much since I quit hitting people. And my early blogging days.
You're punching back at bullies.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing.
The thing is to punch at bullies. I mean, when I see bully, I've learned, you know, that they are weak, they are small, and when you punch back, they crumble, they fall. And I want to quote the man. I want to quote the man. Okay. This actually comes from somewhere in the late 60s. And I will quote this and I will ask you who you think this is. This was written at the time of the great upheaval in societies in the late 60s. And it goes like this. Let's lay it right on the line. Bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. But unlike a team of costumed supervillains, they can't be halted with a punch in the snoot or a zap from a ray gun. The only way to destroy them is to expose them, to reveal them for the insidious evils they really are. The bigot is an unreasoning hater, one who hates blindly, fanatically, indiscriminately. If his hang-up is black men, he hates all black men. If a redhead once offended him, he hates all redheads. If some foreigner beat him to a job, he's down on all foreigners. He hates people he's never seen, people he's never known, with equal intensity, with equal venom. Now, we're not trying to say it's unreasonable for one human being to bug another, but although anyone has the right to dislike another individual, it is totally irrational, patently insane, to condemn an entire race, to despise an entire nation, to vilify an entire religion. Sooner or later, we must learn to judge each other on our own merits. Sooner or later, if man is ever to be worthy of his destiny and her destiny and their destiny, we must fulfill our hearts with tolerance. For then and only then, we will be truly worthy of the concept that man was created in the image of God, if you believe in God, a God who calls us all his children. Pax ex justitia? I think that's what it is. Take a guess who that is.
Donald Trump. No, Steve Bannon. No, who? Alex Jones. No, Tom Petty.
It's titled Stan Soapbox. That's Stan Lee, the man.
Stan Lee is Stan the man. Lee.
Stan Lee, the man.
Dude,
right in the middle of the 60s.
He's 93, man. Number one, please send me that. And two,
yeah, dude, I will.
There is a day coming where for myself and a few of my very close friends, the morning will be insanely huge because Stanley is 93. Is nuts. All right, look, let's take a break, and then I like what we're doing, so I think we should just keep doing it.
I think that's particularly great too, and there's a good reason, but I think this is also important too.
Did that do it? Did we restore the past?
Well, let's check. 9/11.
Oh, there it is. We did it, Ryan. We made 9/11 happen. High five!
All right, high five! Hey.
Well, that probably wouldn't look very good out of context.
Nice. And even before we go on, I just want to say we'll go to break now and we'll come back a little bit later.
Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course...
The truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So... go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
So I went... Oh, we're clapping. I didn't say anything yet.
Yeah, well, it's a good way to start.
Yeah. So I went to the doc today. Okay, so I think by this time, folks who listen to your show may not know me very well, but folks who listen to The Left Show and this through that know I had a nasty car accident in the late 90s that broke my neck in 14 places. And
you were out for you were visiting other places for a while. In other words, you were out of commission.
Yeah, I was pretty fucked up. It took me about a year really to learn how to walk again. And it's caused no end of problems since. It ended my plans for my military career. It ended my pilot's license, everything. And then as it goes on, what I'm having now is a deterioration of certain parts where the fractures were. And so parts of the spine and the neck and the spinous process on those have gone from being smooth like normal folk bones to being a little bitey and a little pokey and a little sharp. Now,
yeah, it does happen.
Yeah, it sucks. And you know, like I said, it's end of September. I hit my halfway in this decade to 50, and you know, I've already got the arthritis problems of someone in their 80s, which is fucking awesome. Yay! But so every once in a while, something goes weird. Something goes wrong. My guess is something breaks or whatever. And so I don't like taking painkillers, and I really don't like opiates. And then to the other side of that, so that you don't think that, you know, I am on the legalized cannabis train, but I don't partake myself. Never really liked any of it. And I swear to God, the first one of you that says, oh, you're just using the wrong strain, I don't care. It's just not a feeling I like. Never has been. And trust me, in my 20s, I tried to find the right strain. It was a vigorous search. And I have found one relief for it all. That is so highly illegal that you can't find it anymore, especially when you're old and fat like me. So I go in from time to time when I just give the fuck up and get steroid shots in certain places. Neck, shoulders, one elbow. I broke a lot of stuff. The neck is just the part where everybody gasps. You tell everybody you broke your fucking elbow or your knee in a car accident, and they're like, whatever. But my head's been really, really bad. And then that's turned into something with my neck. So I went in today, and what happens is, and I think that people with chronic pain will kind of understand the horror of this particular procedure. And that is, I go in and they give me a general anesthetic where they're going to put the steroid injections. And so for about an hour, I have no pain in the places that cause, you know, my just daily miseries. There's no pain. I feel fucking young and energetic.
Yeah.
For about an hour. And then the statistical reality of everything that's already fucked up and the fact that I just poked a needle and squirted chemicals into it. becomes my daily reality. And I got the shots now about 2 hours ago. I immediately, knowing you and I were going to talk, took a couple of painkillers. So that was about, I don't know, two and a half hours ago. So those are about to peak, and then I'm going to go lay back down. So that was what I was talking about earlier about, I'm impressed I even made it today, but chat early enough that we got it hooked up.
And the thing is, I kind of expected today to be slack, and then 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock your time happened, and it's all been hell's a popping since then. You had one thing I thought that was pretty interesting, but I think the one that I was going to talk about this week, it's kind of hard to talk about all the things that are going on, because they are, we're talking about a stochastic news cycle where everything is coming from disparate, different places, some from the same place, but different kind of news over and over again. I can't tell you, I know this is going to take us off on another tangent. I know you've got some stuff to fill up, and then I'll do my bit. I can't tell you how many times, how many people I've come in contact with. They've actually told me that they want to see or perform in the demise of Donald Trump personally with their own two hands. And I have to remind people that I know that everybody is extremely angry, anxious, traumatized. It's almost as if you live in the house of an abuser. And you, if you have been in a situation like that in your life, growing up or being in an abusive relationship, I can't help but think that this is very, very similar to what the country's going through. And some people have come to me and they just said, I've had it. I want to do something. And I have to remind people that I can't believe I've actually talked some people down. Maybe it's because I lived through some of these situations that later I came to this conclusion, but every single time there was great upheaval, blowback, and trauma. Every single time there was some kind of death, assassination, or assassination attempt on people, I have to tell them, do not even go there. Don't even think about doing this. I'm sure people entertain this in their imagination, but there is incredible blowback with every single time somebody actually thinks about or performs something like this. This is not a good place to be. This is not a healthy place to be. You actually have to double down, get the vote out, get people engaged. That's exactly what you should do with your anger. March if you must, you know, oppose, put forth whatever you support that you can to get ridding this evil. But believe me, we live, I know, in a very extraordinary time. You must really think about what you're saying. Don't do this. Don't go there. I have to. Okay, I'm dropping the mic. Done with that.
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, go for it.
So I wanted to talk about the doxing thing because that cracks me up. These exposing, are guys
exposing Nazis.
Yeah, basically what you're doing is and it's from what I can tell, and I'm sure that it's worse than I think because I haven't spent a lot of time looking into it. But what I could tell, they have these are guys that will find out about somebody that opposes their viewpoint, like the mother of the young lady that was murdered by the car, Heather Heyer. What's her name?
Yeah.
Did I get it right? I believe
it's Heather Heyer. Hold on.
And did you see the projection they did for her on the museum?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, take that, Trump. Heather Shove Heyer. It up your ass.
And not only that, I saw an interesting projection on Twitter. I think it was in San Francisco last weekend. Would Twitter, if Twitter was around the, this is a long expression, if Twitter was around the time of Hitler, would they have deleted his account? You know, delete Trump's account. You know, I was just like, we're projecting into the human, into people's consciousness. Do not, this is a person whose name must galvanize people. There is no reason this individual should have even been injured or any of those people who have been injured or hurt. But you knew it was coming.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to talk about that, but the truth is it's like the doxing that's happening to these guys is basically their social media info, which already has where they work and stuff like that. The only thing that's happening is people are targeting their public info. The mother of Heather Heyer was has been getting death threats because of what she said at the memorial service. And there was that website I won't mention that GoDaddy shut down. That put out an article.
Stormfront.
See, I wasn't going to mention it because fuck them. They're back up.
Oh shit! Well, take that out then. Then cut that out.
If I remember. Hey, that's really what it comes down to, man. Is like I said, I took painkillers and everything's going to get a little fuzzy here in a few. But So I don't care. I don't care. And you know, the argument that we were having, or not even the argument, the discussion we were having earlier about all of the violence versus nonviolent things, I am of the opinion that we're at a time when we need both. And I'll use World War II, and I'll bring up Hitler for a good reason, I hope. And there's no way that Hitler would have been beaten, you know, or that the Axis powers would have been defeated had we not gone and shot shit at them. There's no doubt about it. There was no peaceful solution to that. And sometimes in history, we find that there are people like me that are needed more in that moment. And just for that moment. More than people like, you know, pacifists. Pacifists are here to fix what I break. You know, I'm feeling weird about putting myself in it, but that's how we were talking. But, you know, I go through and break all the shit. People like me go through and we smash, you know, and we shoot and we stomp and we put out the fire. And then pacifists come in and they build what replaces the damage that had to happen to get rid, you know, of what was fucked up in the first place. That's what pacifists are for. There are times when there are diplomatic means to fix a problem. North Korea. There are times when it is not. Germany, you know, in the late 30s, early 40s of the 1900s. There is a time for both. So do I care that people are punching Nazis in the face? No, I do not. There was a story I read earlier today where members of the clergy who are nonviolent, because they promised the big sky ghost that they would be nonviolent. And okay, so that's the way you choose to live your life. I can respect that that is the way you've chosen to live your life. And they went and stood in front of the Nazis in Charlottesville. And the first thing that happened was is that the supremacists got to them and stopped and said, "What the hell?" You know, or "What the hell?" And the clergy was like, "We're the clergy and we're going to stand here and you can beat us up. But we're just going to stand here." And the Nazis backed off.
Did they not get charged a couple of times and some people pushed them back?
I'm getting there, Tom.
There was one.
I'm building a narrative, sir. And then so the Nazis backed off for a few minutes, and then they started talking about one another and how much they like banging their cousins and whatever Nazis talk about. And yeah, I always figured out that white supremacist means, you know, chinless inbred. But so
I saw Ozark.
They got, oh, dude, we're going to talk about that in the end segment. Holy shit, that show. So they get to they get over there and they get all riled up and they make a run. They make a run and they're swinging their little batons and their other farm implements and they're, what the fuck is with those shields? I have no idea. And they're coming at the clergy, and out of nowhere come the fucking lefties and the anarchists to run them off.
Yeah.
And the clergy was like, "Wait, we don't want the violence." And once the Nazis ran away, the violent lefties, me, the militant lefties, were like, "Okay, you guys are good. We're going to wander off now." And they went off. And then when the Nazis came back, they did it again. And what the guy said was, is he's like, "I don't agree with their methods. I don't condone what they did, but I will never say that the people that saved us from a beating by the Nazis," and he kept calling them Nazis, which was awesome, "they are not my enemy. And I will not label them as such, even though they believe differently than I believe, because what they did was save us from being beaten up by Nazis." And that's kind of an important thing. So if you want to point out that some douchebag that believes in ethnic cleansing and works at a place that you're no longer going to shop at because he works there, fine. More power to you. But I swear to God, you give out his fucking home address, you know, and you tell people to kill him, you and I are going to have a problem. Because that's where it's too much. Leave that shit alone. Just because he's an asshole doesn't mean his family deserves to be fucking murdered. Sorry. I can't go that far. I will happily punch a white supremacist in the throat. I'll do it with glee. I'll giggle at the end. I swear to God I will. You know, but I'm not going to beat up his kid. And I don't want you to either. So instead, I saw an article that shocked me in sort of a fun way. And this was on Variety, which is not where I go, sir, for my political news very often.
"There's no business like show business. And what do you say?"
So MSNBC, MSNBC.
Formerly Microsoft NBC.
Sure, sure. Do you remember Soledad O'Brien had a show in the 90s? Oh, yeah.
She did, called The Site.
And she had a virtual reality sidekick.
Yeah, Dev.
And I...
That guy is...
Then and now have had... what's the phrase? A gentleman boner for Soledad O'Brien. I used to call it a crush, but I'm 45 now and it sounds creepy when I say that. So, but gentleman boner sounds just fine, right? So I wrote a letter to MSNBC saying, "Hey, I like your show. I like the work that you do, et cetera, et cetera." You know, because I am a letter writer and I honestly, no shit, I like writing letters when things I like happen and when things make me happy or things work out for me. You know, I go to a restaurant, I have a good time. I like to sit down and shoot an email off to the manager saying, "Hey, I had a great time. The food was great. Your server was perfect. Thank you so much." Because that's how I am. And I ended up getting back an autographed picture of Soledad O'Brien, which immediately went into, and Dev, which I didn't give a shit about, immediately went into an expensive frame and became, other than my computer, the most expensive thing in my office at that time. And then a girl I was breaking up with took it outside and lit it on fire. you love that news bitch more than you love me. Like, well, she's never called me names.
Well, maybe so.
So, MSNBC now ranks as the number one cable network in total viewers for the first time ever. Wednesday, August 16th, they averaged 1.52 million viewers for the total day across all cable, edging out second place Fox News, who averaged 1.5. CNN was fourth among all cable networks for the day with 1.13. Nickelodeon was third. Hey, CNN, you got beat by Nickelodeon, the people that pour green goo on people. Maybe you should stop doing that. Anyway, in primetime, MSNBC was also first in total viewers among cable news networks with 2.61 million viewers. Fox News was second with 2.4. CNN was third with 1.5. And the key demo for primetime, MSNBC, was first. It was 613,000. This doesn't sound like a lot, but, I mean, think about it. The core three network newses used to get between 10 and 15 million viewers a night. Now they're down around 6 or 7. And so when you blow off the primetime news, just keep in mind, they're still kicking the shit out of cable. But anyway, Wednesday's episodes of The Rachel Maddow Show and The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, two people I like quite a bit, no matter how much we made fun of Rachel Maddow not too long ago, you and I, together on this show. It was one of our first ones, as I recall.
Did we?
Yeah, because of the whole Trump's taxes, and they basically had like one loose page, like page four.
Oh, God, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
So here's the thing, and I threw this out on the social media, and for some reason, which is weird, it's being ignored, and I don't understand why, and I have to just assume that nobody knows what the fuck I'm talking about because I pay attention to minutia like this. Keep in mind, I'm the guy that used the TiVo for the very first time to grab a Senate hearing off C-SPAN. With my very first TV, because I was busy watching a House hearing on the other C-SPAN.
Jesus Christ. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I thought I was weird for taking all that news, taping all that news that I've now digitized for my sons, but it doesn't matter because it's all on YouTube anyway.
Yep. So, yeah, now, this was years ago. I mean, it was a TiVo Series 1, for Christ's sake. Yeah, so I had to turn it on the one like a fucking VCR and then go up to another TV to watch the other C-SPAN. So the comment that I made, which is why I'm a little surprised, is that it went dark, is that's a poor choice of words. So was, you know, hey, MSNBC, keep in mind, or I hope that you remember, that this has more to do with Donald A. Trump than the fact that you guys... oh, here it is. Well, MSNBC, I hope you know this is more about Donald J. Trump than it is about your ethnicity cleansing over the last couple of years. And that's what I want to talk about for just a second. Over the last few years, starting in about 2014, MSNBC started basically running off anybody that was not Lily White. One of the first that they took out, and for anybody that knows my history, and I apologize to Karen over and over again when she deigns to talk to me, Karen Finney's Disrupt was canceled, like, out of nowhere on MSNBC. It was at 4 p.m. It was just one goddamn day. It didn't even get a year. I met Karen when she was the communications director for the Howard Dean DNC. I fell instantly smitten with her. She is tall. She is insanely smart. So smart. She loves dogs. Oh, she's so fucking smart. I mean, yeah, sure. She was a communications director for Hillary Clinton. I don't think that any of those problems were really her fault. You know, so I'll tease in that direction. However, she worked with Howard Dean on the original Dean, 50 state strategy, you know, and her nationwide communications thing that got us that 2 years of the Dems being able to run the House and the Senate again during the Bush administration.
Right.
She was one of the key people in that. Well, you know, what happens after, I don't know the players all that well. And I know that she was frustrated with a lot of stuff, but Karen Finney was the first one to get run off. Oh, why do I mention that? Because she's non-white. And then a little while later, Alex Wagner.
Yeah, that's right.
Gets run off.
Alex Wagner was another one.
And now
Lisa
Alex
Harris
Wagner.
Perry.
Well, I'm Tom, for fuck's sake, dude. I'm getting there. I am building a narrative.
Indeed I am.
We all know you're smarter than me.
No, I was there. lifting up the pages like who did MSNBC which people of color has MSNBC whacked in the last several years?
So many. But Alex Wagner was another one that I was sad to see leave because she had, now look, please just understand that there are pretty people on television and that I am a target demographic for that. And Alex Wagner is no exception. Now, the thing with Alex Wagner is that she could be, you know, deadly serious about things. And then she could naturally flip so gracefully to an upbeat story without it feeling awkward. Mm-hmm. I have said 1,000 times, I have a huge thing for Robin Mead on MSNBC in the morning. That's not even news.
HLN.
It's so bad.
She's HLN.
That's right. Headline news. And you know, I've been watching her for years. I mean, like, as long as I've been married, I've been watching Robin Mead. I don't know what that has to do with it. And with her transitions from sad to happy. And I know sometimes it's because they throw segments from earlier and later in together. You know, they kind of stitch them like that. Always awkward, especially live. But Alex Wagner was really good at being able to do that. And I liked the shows that she did. And I liked when she anchored the news. And I liked her voice. I liked the way she talked. I liked her cadence, everything. She was good. And to me, her getting run off, because she's over, I think she went to the Atlantic. I don't know where she is now. It was a huge thing. It was a big gap. And they replaced her with a dude. And then you had the Reverend run off.
Oh, Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton. Now, here's the thing. While he does fall into the demographic that I'm talking about, sometimes, man, watching Al Sharpton show got a little bit dragging.
Well, I think what you're talking about is being able to toss the package. Yeah. And those that have that talent, like, you know, Alex Wagner, Robin Mead, Lynn Russell was a perfect example of that. Because she was the kind of person who could actually, you know, pivot on a dime. And she could do the way that which people like that can present. They just have this natural talent.
Yeah.
Some people just don't have that natural talent. They're good. They're good speakers. You know, I know other people who are like incredibly, like very attractive looking, but maybe the camera doesn't love them. But for some particular reason, they're really, really good in the TV medium. There's a lot of them. But that mixture, that unique mixture, where it all comes together, you know, it's just, you got it, got it.
So they got rid of Sharpton, and the truth is like I said, is sometimes Sharpton's preacher cadence got on my nerves, but his content was solid. And again, it was a talented producer, I believe, could have engineered the Reverend show to be a lot easier to watch. But then you get to Melissa Harris Perry.
Yeah.
And Melissa Harris Perry had in news of the political nature, her thing was unique in the way that she worked and the way that she presented and all of that. And then she was told by MSNBC higher ups to shush and to quit being unpredictable and to stop basically running her show the way she wanted to. Now, on a much smaller scale, so much so that I'm embarrassed to bring up myself in this example. I had that problem with our used to be biggest station out here when I was on there. And that was, I had a political show called Left of the Dial on KSL News Radio out here.
Yeah.
We were, at the time, the station was huge in the market and had been for decades. They no longer are. They're like fourth or fifth now because they've got bad consultants and they do everything the consultants say. And consultants, for the most part, just fucking guess.
But they're the big 50,000 watt blowtorch, aren't
yeah.
they?
AM, FM, HD, channel 3. And
you can actually pick up the radio. Yeah, you can pick up the radio out here.
Yeah. Yeah, you absolutely can. I mean,
long distances. Go on.
Yeah, they're huge. And I've been listening to them since I was a little kid.
Sure.
My dad was friends with a couple of their early personalities that weren't so much political back in the, you know, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, but were, I think, the forefront of what was to come with political radio that turned into Limbaugh, and then Limbaugh turned us into Everybody Now. But yeah, I had that same problem, which was, we don't like the way that you talk about stuff on your show. And we don't want you to have guests on anymore either. We just want you to talk. And when I have an hour, a calendar hour is what I called it, in which I had 27 minutes of talk time, yeah, just enough time to have a moderately interesting interview with someone, or I could just sit there and go, Republicans are bad. And because it was a weekend show, upset all the football fans waiting for their game to start. And I did it for 3 years, and because I'm a chump and I wanted to be there. And the worse that it got, the harder I worked at it, until one day I was told not to do something and I thought that it was horseshit. And so I did it anyway. That's a long story for another show. And with Melissa Harris Perry, her show was odd. You know, the way that she would shuffle in and out guests at her little table, the way that she would throw out hashtags. I still to this day don't understand how anybody like her could call herself a nerd. You know, you're a professor at a fancy pants university, lady. What I don't understand what's nerdy, and it may just be that I'm inside your bubble. I don't know, but anyway, according to the article that I'm throwing back to right now, is like she got preempted a whole bunch of times, which is what happened to me. It's why I bring it up. And then they dragged her.
Right.
They dragged her out to the Iowa caucuses, and then never used her. And when I was with KSL, I was out at the DNCC in Denver in 2008, and the big fancy pants guy with the weekday show barred me from getting near any of the equipment or talking to the station on an ISDN line, and instead I had to call in on my cell phone, and I wasn't allowed in the press bullpen, even though I had creds and was sent. He made more than I did, so I got blocked. And so the I think the key paragraph is, instead, Harris Perry violated a cardinal rule for minorities who want to get ahead in a world controlled by old white dudes like MSNBC chairman Andy Lack and MSNBC president Phil Griffin. She spoke up for herself. She sent an email out to her staff saying, quote, "I am not a token, mammy, or a little brown bobblehead," the Wake Forest professor of political science wrote in a letter to her staff. Instead, "I am not owned by NBC executives or MSNBC. I love our show. I want it back." Over the weekend, Harris Perry refused to allow the network to smooth over the rift by hosting her program as if nothing was wrong. And by Monday, she no longer had one there. And so what we looked at over this 2-year period, because there were other people that were included in this, was a sweep through of canceled talent that all happened to be minority, that 3 out of 4 of the big names were women. And yet we keep Joe Scarborough. And
yeah, why do we keep Joe Scarborough?
I don't know, because he's the token?
Mm.
Maybe. Don't get me wrong, he's been pretty fucking entertaining the last couple of months, but before that, no. If it weren't for Mika, I would never have even looked at that show. But she's pretty, and I'm a target demographic.
I don't watch that show at all, because it comes on, like, by the time I wake, they're off. So I'm benefited by that.
I don't sleep.
I wouldn't, I've had so many issues with them, and I wouldn't even bother. But go on.
But that's it. They had a black purge. You know, they fired Joy Reid. They demoted Al Roker. Tamron Hall was gone. Melissa Harris Perry, Karen Finney, the Reverend Al Sharpton, Alex Wagner, all of them.
Yeah.
Gone. And they started
go ahead.
They started replacing them with Fox News firees or quitties that actually didn't know how to do news because they are from Fox News.
Yep.
So
like Greta Van Susteren.
Yeah. So, okay. As I believe that I am lawfully obligated to do anytime I mention Karen Finney, once upon a time, when people didn't know Karen very well, when she, because she's a comms director the way I am, you know, when I work in campaigns, and that is, if my name gets in the newspaper, it better be because I got fired. Otherwise, I'm doing my job wrong, because the only voice that should speak for my campaign is my candidate. The only personality that should be out in the world about my campaign is my candidate. But every once in a while, Dr. Dean would have to go and do a thing, probably doctory shit, and they'd pull Karen out and she'd go on the news and say something. And I caught an article or an interview or a panel interview with her in some fucking Republican back in 2006 or seven, and posted it on my blog at the time, which had just blown up thanks to Sean Hannity being sort of a preachy, pretentious douchebag at me. And in which I praised both her political acumen, her intelligence, and the fact that I had a ridiculous crush on her. And sadly, for almost a decade after that, it was her top Google return when you put in her name. And I felt awful about it. Not bad enough to delete it, but I did feel bad. I did feel a little bad. So, MSNBC, it's because of Trump. It's got nothing to do with the fact that you fired all the non-whites. And that's not to say I got a problem with the whites you kept. I don't. I don't think that they ought to be fired either. I just think that, you know, when you were trying to find those viewpoints, I think that news, corporate news, would benefit very much from taking a look at the way that Vice News is doing things. And perhaps, no, that model works better for paid cable, sure, but we do want content. There's a reason that the most listened to radio station, you know, in America is NPR by a factor of millions. And it's, we want the depth and the content. Sometimes it gets a little ridiculous. We understand. But you keep giving us less, and what we really need and want is more. And please don't pat yourselves on the back, MSNBC, and think that your success this week has a goddamn thing to do with anything other than your ginger and your lesbian.
Here's the thing about it all is, I think that we've seen the opportunity of what the news can be, because what you have when you get into prime time, you're into two things. You're either into panel discussions on CNN, or else you're into detailed granular takedowns like you would see with Rachel's show or Lawrence's show. What happens, and I recommend people dig into Vice and the entire Vice catalog of shows, no matter what it is. Wonderful stuff like Abandoned, other stuff like there's even one where it just tracks, you know, hate groups and stuff. What happened last weekend with Vice going into Charlottesville and being right there, right in the middle of everything, I think that it was important for people to witness that, because we're actually, news organizations are not doing that. They're just simply sitting on the anchor desk and people are doing discussions. They're not getting out there and they're not getting the specific news. I can go to CBC, I could go to BBC or Sky or whatever, and I can see that there was an enormous landslide somewhere in South America that took out thousands of people. Where the fuck is that? I mean, I can't find that on the news.
You could find that in Fox's The World in a Minute, where they take everything that happens in the world and they squish it into a 45-second soundbite, and then they go back to why they're terrified of black people.
Yeah. There used to be the 2-minute newscast on CNN at the top of the hour, but that was like 30 years ago. That's I think what's happening is, no matter who is behind the camera, and it's usually always somebody you wouldn't expect, you're getting perspectives and you're seeing the world as it really is. They had a chance. They shopped around partnerships a couple of years ago and got kicked around. I think they're at the New York Times. CNN took a look at them. I thought it would have been a really good fit as an alternative channel to CNN, because then you're right there, right in the middle of everything. And they didn't take it. So you'll see stuff on HBO. They do an evening newscast. I mean, I could go on, but I agree with you. I think we really get into this machine. Cable news is quite a machine now. They know where the how to generate that money. They've streamlined the talent, like you're talking about. And, you know, it's always somebody that comes along and flips everything on its end. But I couldn't be happier that Fox is doing an awful job right now. I really want them to just crash and burn.
I'm with you. There was a clip I was playing around the other day where this guy's like, and I don't even know him, he's one of the new white people, and he's like, we're not a racist nation and we need people to stop acting like it. And then
Jesse Waters.
So he goes to his break. He's coming up next. These black people did a thing, and those black people are scary. Okay, you no filter douche. What an ass.
Exactly.
I know nothing. Nothing.
So we could actually go to another break, or we could wrap this up.
Let's take a quick little break.
All right.
And then come back and wrap it up.
Deal.
Okay, I'll be right back.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests, good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the 7th draft of a resignation message to the soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh Coffee Cast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The Coffee Cast podcast.
And we're back.
Oh, we are.
Hey.
Filmed before a live studio audience.
Not right here and at the CBS Broadcast Center in Hollywood, California.
I will always, for every station identification, remember Paul Giamatti telling Howard Stern, WNBC. The best part of that movie.
No, this is how you should do it. It should be like this. Was it, what do you call him? Pig nose, pig breath, pig something?
Pig snot. Pig snot. Something. Pig something. I don't remember.
WNBC.
So Ozark.
Ozark. Now we talk about Ozark. First of all, for those who don't have Netflix, get it. Number two, it's an original production. Number three, Jason Bateman directs at least the first a couple of episodes. But it is.
And the ninth,
I think, the era.
I think the Go tenth. On. And the last two, I think, as well. 9 and 10.
And it's also got Laura fucking Linney in it. It is a gut punch. It is. If you've been looking for something that is a good. I've been talking to some people thinking about does it want to be like Breaking Bad? It's different. It's a family in crisis. It's somebody like really literally wrestling with their life and trying to keep themselves and their family alive while they're doing unspeakable things that they ordinarily wouldn't do. However, go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, no. It was, you had mentioned that you finally, that you got around. Did you make it all the way to episode 10?
No, I didn't make it. Actually, well, here's it. I looked at it. I looked at 10. I think we're through the first four or five. It's so much of a gut punch. It just leaves me. God.
You are in for it. By the time I finished, honest to Christ, I finished episode 10 late last night.
Oh, yeah.
And was just like in shock at what I had watched. And it was just jarring. And it's not gratuitous for the most part. Every once in a while something pops up and you're like, holy shit. But for the most part, it's just like the sense of anticipation is so thick that it just gets up and on top of you. So yeah, I finished it last night, and that last episode was so well put together, so well written, so well directed, all of it, and so well acted. I just was like, oh my God, I can't believe that's the end of the fucking season. These short British homage seasons on cable are driving me nuts. With that said, this morning, very early this morning, around 5 a.m., I woke up like a child on Christmas morning. And I ran to my computer and flipped on my Netflix and started watching in fits and spurts, because I'm busy doing other shit today, The Defenders, the new Marvel outing with...
Is it out now?
Yeah,
is
it came out today.
Oh, my God, I saw it. I saw the trailer for it, and I was just going, yes!
And I am now about... So, again, not only did I get steroid shots in my fucking neck, I'm taking time off what could be me watching The Defenders. Because I'm halfway through episode 5 now, as we record this late in the afternoon. But it's so good so far. Oh, my God, it is so fucking good. It is just... And there's only 8 fucking episodes. 8. I am only devastated. Only 8. Well, I will finish it today.
Let's think about it this way. Just to make sure that I was going, what is a good and decent number of episodes now that we're on short episodes? Sherlock has three per season.
But 90 minutes, so they're like little movies. You get 3 movies.
It's wonderful. Another show I highly recommend takes place in the Appalachia of the UK. And I know that there are people who are gonna really hate that, but it's called Hinterland. The show is not only shot in Wales, but it's also done in the original language, in Welsh. So they film the same scenes twice in everything. It's wonderful.
What's that called?
If you like Broadchurch, Broadchurch is wonderful because it's got David Tennant. You know,
Well, and the mom from Broadchurch is the new Doctor Who.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And... They're really very, it's okay. Here's one also, I can't also forget one of the other performers. Everybody in it is just completely top notch. It's fantastic. And there's an explosion of this kind of detective noir everywhere. So, you know, pass it on. If there's other episodes that you really like, let us know about it, please. But to me, I'm not picking up everything just yet. I don't have that kind of time to watch all of that. But
yeah, usually when we have that kind of time, it's because we do that in between sending out fucking resumes 8 hours a day.
And then get kicked in the teeth saying like, no, we really do. We're going to go on with somebody else.
Sorry, old person. All right. Well, that's it. That's all I wanted to say.
Oh, damn. Now, of course, just so we make sure about The Defenders, we're talking Jessica Jones. We're also talking
Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Daredevil.
Daredevil.
Plus the night nurse.
Yeah.
And then the detective, who I'm not going to say anything, but I've read the comics and I know how she ends up becoming involved. And Stick is there, and Sigourney Weaver is there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so, it's defenders. So because there's a lot of people who were talking about Iron Fist, and I've watched the first couple of episodes of Iron Fist, and some people are walking away from it with some derogatory comments.
You know what? They're wrong. Most of it is based.
Why are they wrong? Tell me why.
Okay, when you compare it against the first half of the first season of Luke Cage, nothing's going to be that good.
Yeah.
In fact, until Copperhead shows up, that whole goddamn episode was amazing. Two, a lot of it was screams and yells of cultural appropriation, which there were in a lot of these shows that get tagged on that. You have the most diverse writing, directing, and technical film crews in any show anywhere. And the fact that Danny Rand is a character almost six decades old, and that his backstory is what it is and has been for that long, then you know, why would you make that particular change when honestly what that would be is blatant pandering and nearly insulting, because you would have to not only rewrite it so much that most of your fan base would wander off, but two, I do believe that the way that people want that it handled, that we're on the social justice train on that one, don't know horseshit about comics, and wanted people to write dumber. And there's already enough dumb comic book stuff out there. Look at you, Legends of Tomorrow and Gotham. So, you know, the truth is, and then, I mean, when you put two and two together, Danny Rand's backstory is pretty dry. He's basically just a guy with a glowy power fist who, you know, trained in Asia and won a tournament that he wasn't supposed to win. So, you know, really that's what it is. And they got eight episodes out of that. And I really liked him. And the fact is that I didn't look at it as this standalone the way I had with Daredevil or Jessica Jones or, you know, or to that point, even Luke Cage. Because Danny Rand is what he is, and he is something to move the story along and complete the foursome that gave me what I'm watching now. He's a whiny white guy, and he's fucking perfect at it. So I liked Iron Fist. I didn't love it. Jessica Jones, season one, awesome. Daredevil, season one, amazing. Season two, it was pretty good. Had some low points.
Too much, a lot of stretch out. So I'm just saying you could have done it in fewer episodes.
They could have done with eight. It hurts me to say that because I want 23. But I get the Defenders today, which I honestly I will finish before I go to bed, no matter how late I have to stay up because of all this other shit I have to do. But when the guys show up to do the comic book show, the world's greatest comic book podcast at worldsgreatestpodcast.com every Tuesday.
And listen to it, people.
It's a fun show. I will be the only one having watched it. They'll be like, oh, I got through episode one or two. And then all of the spoilers they've dropped about Game of Thrones, which I have not had time to watch yet. Anyway.
Yes. And, I think that we can definitely close on this episode. It's kind of a broad scape, so to speak.
Yeah.
There's a lot that we've covered. There's tremendous amounts that we've covered. So for a week that was stochastic, I would rather conclude it like this. Well, Jeff, that was really incredible, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
All right, then.
You caught me with a mouthful of ice cubes. I thought I had a second.
The audio isn't working, but nevertheless, stick around for next time.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before. Some try to tell me thoughts they cannot.